Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I'm comedian Steel Saunders, and I do love Star Wars. And each week we find someone of interest to talk about it with. And this week we have found three people of interest to discuss the latest episode of The Mandalorian, The Prisoner. And this is the Steel Wars Mandalorian Chit Chat, a podcast title that I really don't think gets enough credit for the sweet reference. But we will proceed to a very fun episode of The Mandalorian. Joining us to discuss said episode from Ohio, the king of all Toms, King Tom. How you doing, buddy?
Doing all right, Steel. How about you?
I feel weird. I'll talk about that in 2 seconds. But also joining us, our sometimes friend in New York, from the Canto Bite Dispatch, it's your friend and sometimes mine, Emily Lind.
Hi, Steel.
How you doing?
I'm good. I think we didn't say anything bad about you last time.
Okay, well, I've been getting besmirched on the Canto Bite Dispatch. Oh, I can't miss. Oh, heaven forfend that I slightly mess up saying this. The cherished podcast. Steel Demption on the last episode, I thought, but
yeah.
Okay,
for now.
Always for now.
Yeah.
It's what I hope does not happen at the end of episode 9, where it's all solved and then there's this for now thing. But we'll do that in podcast land. Also joining us, the blue naked Skeletor lying on a battle cat from New Jersey. It's Robbo. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Steel. Glad to be back.
Oh, that sounds gloriously sincere. Now, for those just listening onto the podcast, Robbo, because he's a man of mystery, instead of having video up on YouTube, he's just got Skeletor very Klieg Lars. Jack Thompson had a very similar naked pose in a 1970s magazine. Anyway, we are talking about the Prisoner, and for me, this episode is just talking about Bill Burr in Star Wars and how rad that is.
Can it be about something else for the rest of us?
I'm happy to also talk about Clancy Brown and Mark Boone Jr. in Star Wars.
Okay. Is my Bill Burr hype way off? I just thought everyone would have had to have loved that. Robbo, you seem unsurprisingly to be the contrarian of this situation.
I just didn't think it was worth devoting the entire episode to. I mean, it's great, but I guess. I don't really know who this guy is. Like, I feel like I've seen him before. But, like, if you told me it was because, like, oh, I sat next to him on a bus a couple years ago, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I wouldn't know any better.
I always love it when people are angry that someone isn't famous enough for them to know him. Like, they resent it. I don't even know him. Don't even know him. Never heard of him. But where do you stand, Tom?
I'm familiar with him maybe a little bit more than Robbo. His presence didn't do much for me, but his performance I liked. I did have a question about him. What did you think of the little gimmick over-the-shoulder extra blaster he had? And I'm asking this for a reason, but I want to know, after you saw it in action, what you thought of it.
King Tom getting straight to the issues.
It's stupid and I love it.
But I appreciate that. And I'm glad I know, but I'm asking Steel specifically for a reason. I have a reason for this.
I know. I've just worked out the reason.
Okay.
And I'll save that. But I don't know. It doesn't seem reasonable because it seemed like it was a practical weapon up there.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like it was different from, like, the shot they showed of him at Celebration, the gun seemed, in my memory, far thinner.
Yeah, the gun seemed like it was part of the arm, not that the arm was holding a gun.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you think it's a different gun?
I thought it was something he switched. It was like a pistol he switched out. And I didn't mind it because it wasn't like a perfect shot. It was just something that added an extra shot that may or may not hit something. But you have figured out why I asked this question, right?
I think so. But before that,
okay,
at Celebration, I thought it was like super like fan film-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It was just that shot, but it didn't. It made me less excited for the show. That just that shot, it was just sort of like, oh. And I think because it was Bill Burr as well, it was just like, why has Bill Burr got this weird stick on his shoulder? But in the actual episode, I actually really liked it, and I thought it was just a cool little sort of silly superhero addition. And I'm not sure if this is where you're going, an ode. To the great man of the EU.
Which one? There are so many great men of the EU.
Dashawn R. Render.
Yep, the shoulder pads weren't big enough. But no, the reason I am asking is because one of the very last things I did before leaving Celebration was do a mini pod with you. And we talked about The Mandalorian, and you thought that looked too fan servicey and could not believe that it was going to be in Star Wars. So I'm very happy that your opinion of it has changed, or that it was different.
Did he actually say fan servicey? Because how is it fan servicey? It's like, I don't think we've ever seen that before.
Maybe fan filmy.
It definitely would have been. And Robbo is a man that seems to. Robbo just thinks I just say six things in different variations on these podcasts.
Oh, they're not variations. I would just say it's more like the order in which you say the six things. That's what you change up.
Anyway, but yes, I definitely definitely would have been fan filmy. But so, Emily, you haven't really followed Bill Burr's comedy?
Oh, no, I know Bill Burr. I love him.
Okay.
And he's awesome in Breaking Bad. It's just like, I'm such a character actor fan, and this episode happened to have two of my favorite character actors in it, along with Bill Burr.
Ah, because I'm not sure if this character, what's his name?
Mayfeld,
that's it. Like, I'm not sure if I think Mayfield is, like, the best Star Wars character of the year, or I just love Bill Burr and he's in Star Wars. Because
I will say it's not a very Star Wars-y name.
No, it's not.
Well, it is in the sense that, like, I'd say one out of every 10 Star Wars names these days is just like a regular kind of old timey last name. So it's like, you've got your Han Solos, you got your Dash Rendars, and you got your Beckets.
Oh, that's right? True.
You've got your, you know, like Luke is a real name and Owen is a real name and Lars is a real name and stuff like that. So, you know, like it's always kind of been like that. It's just that recently, like in the prequel era, they kind of abandoned that and they just went with whatever was left on Uncle George's big notebook of names that he wrote in like 1974. It's like, you know, so, but now they're kind of getting back to like, yeah, every once in a while, a name's got to be like a regular name just because why not? So I don't know. I mean, I can see why it would bug people. To me, I kind of like every couple of names, I'd like to hear like a real-ish sounding name.
I also like that the out of universe that Bill Burr doesn't have a super wacky name. I feel like that helps his character. Because one thing I would love to know if he rewrote those lines or sort of collaborated on them, because they are just like all his ball busting was just him. It just sounded like things he would say to someone else, like at like the comedian's table at the Comedy Cellar or whatever. But I just adored him in the universe, and Jackie was over the moon. She was very delighted. But Emily, who are the character actors that you are fanning out on?
Okay, so Mark Boone Jr. is the one who plays Ran, and I had no idea he was going to be in this. And when I see him, like that biker beard that he has in there, he looks exactly like he did on Sons of Anarchy, which I think is hilarious. But he was also in, he was Gordon's dirty cop partner in Batman Begins.
The guy who looks like fat Tom Waits.
Yeah.
And he's got the Duck Dynasty thing going on.
Yeah, he's got the big beard. Okay, that guy. Like, he's always delightful in everything. And then Clancy Brown as the devil guy who is, I mean, Shawshank Redemption most famously. He's the horrible guard in that. But he was on the past season or two of Billions, and he's done tons of voiceover work, a lot of cartoons, including
Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob, right?
Yeah. And he including some voices in Clone Wars and maybe Rebels.
Both, yeah. And he was on Lost.
That's right.
Who was he on Lost?
He was Kelvin Inman, who trained Saeed in torture in Iraq and then later showed up in the hatch before Desmond at the end of season two.
Whoa. How do you get in the hatch?
We don't know. He was a member of the Dharma Initiative, I guess.
What a kick-ass show that was. And he's been over for like 15 years. How'd he get inside? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. I didn't even recognize it was him.
Fills you with confidence for this week.
He's also the evil stepdad in Pet Sematary 2 and was one of the leads on Earth 2, a sci-fi show in the mid-90s that I might be the only person on Earth who remembers.
Earth 2? So, the guy Ran, well, did you say he was on Sons of Anarchy?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I never watched that, but both Jackie and I were like, who is that? Like, he seemed just... I don't know. He just suggested that we had to know him. So anyway, the Mandalorian rocks up at Rand's space station and he meets all the crew. There was this weird Pulp Fiction reference, I think, when Ran is talking to the Mandalorian and says, I think about how the only reason he sort of took him in was because he had the ship, and then he gave him the look, which was an awesome little like sort of bit of tension. And then Ran says, "Is that gratitude? Is that what Ving Rhames tells Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction?"
That's pride, effing with
pride,
you.
Pride. Okay. Damn it. But I haven't really been on social media much to suss it out because I'm scared of The Last Jedi. I mean, The Rise of Skywalker. Spoilers. I know what happens at the end of The Last Jedi. But what did you guys think? How did you say her name? Exine?
I'm just Jean.
Jean.
I believe it's pronounced the same way that the syllable she is pronounced in Romanized Chinese. So XI in Romanized Chinese means like she or ji, and that's how they pronounce it in this one.
I should have used my EU experience. Shizor.
Yeah, Shizor, like that, yeah.
Wow. I found her a bit Harley Quinn-y, and I'm not that big a fan of Harley Quinn.
I found her a bit Harley Quinn-y, but I am a big fan of Harley Quinn, so I was totally okay with it.
Like, what Harley Quinn are we talking about? Are we talking about like animated series? Because I didn't see that at all. Or are we talking like the, you know, Hot Topic version from the movie that I didn't see?
Oh, I'm only aware of the Hot Topic version of the movie you did not see.
Okay, so.
Hey, I've just got to go check on my little boy. He's crying. So you guys continue talking about The Mandalorian. Wait there.
We're totally talking about you, dude.
Wait. I'll just set you all up on the view. Okay, go for it.
I got nothing. I don't know.
I don't know.
Without Steel here, it doesn't feel right.
I did like her, and I like just the immediate, the Mandalorian actually knows other people beyond just the Mandalorians and knows them and like obviously spent time with these people.
I think I see things more from your perspective, Emily. Like, I liked her portrayal. I could see why someone would say she's the Harley Quinn from the Suicide movie that, like, Rabo I never saw. And that's a different type of character for Star Wars, but it's not unbelievable in this element here.
I think the point of this episode is just to show you that, like, oh, the Mandalorians, he's not like a bad guy. There's like real bad guys out there. There's like, I think that was the whole, that was what made the episode interesting to me, is because it was constantly playing with like, oh, he might actually be in real danger here. Like, he might, you know, there was like a menace. There was like a potential for violence to just break out at any moment that you very rarely get in Star Wars, because usually they don't stick around on things that long. They don't dwell on scenes of just people being threatening and nasty. And you kind of got like exactly like what was dangerous about each one of them. You kind of figured it out right in that first scene where they're all together in the hold of the ship.
And there were times I didn't know where the story was going to go. When he woke up in the jail cell, I thought he was going to be there for the rest of the episode, if not going into the next week's episode.
Yeah, I can see that. I did have that brief moment of, oh, is this where it's going to end? And then we're going to pick up with him. Like, maybe they are actually going to get away with Baby Yoda, and he's going to have to get his ship back.
Right. Actual menace towards Baby Yoda, which was probably the scariest thing I've seen in a Star Wars product or anywhere else.
Yeah, this is the first time, I think, since... Well, I mean, it's hard to say, because there were always like things in Star Wars that were like too much for my son. Mm-hmm. Like, he did not like seeing Luke get his hand cut off at all. And because he was like four and I shouldn't have showed it to him. and things like when he saw The Force Awakens, he was, you know, 1 year older, and he kind of got freaked out sometimes by the giant hologram Snoke. But this was the only time where, like, he's older now. He's nine. And so he's watched plenty of things that are a little bit on the scary side. And this is like the first time I've seen him with Star Wars be like, ah, like I could tell that he was kind of, it was getting to him a little bit. Like, he did not trust these characters and did not feel confident that he knew what was going to happen next in the way that kids like to feel confident. So the way that makes them comfortable with shows like Star Wars and stuff, like, I had to like be like, you know, like, the Mando is not going to lose. OK, I'm just letting you know, like, I've seen it. He doesn't lose.
Right.
But, yeah,
I think for us, we've seen other serialized TV shows and we expect certain things to carry over from episode to episode. So it's very likely that Baby Yoda would still be in danger in the next episode, or that the Mandalorian would still be in trouble because of something that happened in this episode carrying over to next week. But it doesn't seem like the Mandalorian is setting up for that.
I was kind of surprised by that until I saw that at the end, the writing credit, that it was written by different people. It was written by the director and a co-writer, which is, you know, different from all the other episodes except episode 5, which was written by Filoni. So it's like those are the two outliers, I think, on the writing credits. And not that they are any more self-contained than the other episodes, but, man, you couldn't pick two more different episodes for me. Like, I just – I don't – it seems they're almost like from different shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because this one is like, this is such a tropey episode. It just happens to be tropes that I really, really like. Like, I love the prisoner breakout story. Mm-hmm. And I like the sort of, I guess, you know, the modern reference for it would be the Suicide Squad. Like, you're getting a bunch of not good people together. And yeah, like, that's who you're following.
Yeah, or like any other, like, get the gang together and pull one more job type thing, which is a big Western thing. There's always, like, you aren't a hero in a Western unless there's, like, some kind of life that you're trying to put behind you, but you got one more thing you got to do before you leave. That's, like, everybody. So, you know, this is, like, it's, like, the equivalent of, like, a train robbery, right? Like, it's a, or, like, you know, instead of stealing, like, gold bullion or something, you're springing a prisoner, but it's not all that different. And if you made it into, like, a like, there's a prisoner transport on this train and we got to get him off, it would be very similar.
One thing I was wondering is what went into his decision to not do jobs for these guys anymore?
Yeah, it's not really clear why he came back either. So
I was thinking he went there because he couldn't get anything with the guild. And maybe that's also why he's not working with this particular gang, is because he can't go back to the guild right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things the show has not bothered to explain, is now that he's not, like, he's been kicked out of the guild, it's like, what is his goal? Like, he tried to find a place to hide Yoju. To see if Steel's back yet. Sounds like he's not.
I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed.
He was waiting.
but then he kind of doesn't seem to be thinking about that anymore, because he's not going to places after this that he could hide the kid. So it's like, what is he trying to do? Like, I'm surprised the show hasn't stated, like, a new goal for him. Like, oh, I need to get to here or here and do this, but I don't have enough money, so I'm going to do this next.
Yeah, that's why when people, like, it's sort of an ironic thing, but when people say, oh, I wish I'd get on with the story, and it's like, what is the story?
Yeah.
There's no, it's just, yeah, he hasn't really stated what he's doing, like, at all in the whole deal. But I wonder if his turning point from being the sort of ruthless killer was Yoju, or it, like, is it something that happened way before that?
I think it's before that, because the hints are already there that he's not that bad of a guy, like, that he, or that he's trying to, like, be fair with people. For example, when Ugnulty, like, you know, refuses payment, he's like, no, I need to pay you. Like, I would not survive. You deserve half of whatever I get from this, and it's going to be a lot.
Oh, maybe it was the purge is what changed him, that he had to look after his people that had taken him in.
Yeah, it's not clear whether he's actually doing that, though, because he kind of just left him to die. He's like, they've got jetpacks and I don't. They should be fine.
Well, they're Mandalorians. Fighting is, like, especially that group of Mandalorians seem to be able to handle themselves. Now, granted, yeah.
Yeah, in the very first episode, he's also talking, like, I was a foundling. He's like, I know. Like, you don't stop talking about it, so yes, I know. I've never seen your face, but I know you were a foundling.
Wow. I want your guys' opinion on a line and whether it's too on the nose or not. I loved it, but when they introduced Bill Burr, and they have the line about, oh, he was an Imperial sharpshooter. And the Manda goes, like, that's not saying much. And Bill Burr's, like, furious. I wasn't a stormtrooper.
Wise ass.
I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too.
Is the wise ass acceptable?
From Bill Burr, yes. From anyone else in Star Wars, no.
So Poe Dameron saying, like, big ass door. Not acceptable?
I think that's different than wise ass.
So if you said wise ass door.
I don't even know when does he say big ass door?
Everybody get behind that big ass door on crate.
See,
it's not like a sore thumb to me. I don't know why. It's like,
that's sort of like real world language coming into it. It never like really glares out to me. I know it does to you, Robbo.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize that inevitably because the people who write it are different era. Like, the language of the characters is going to change no matter what. You can't avoid it. And you could deconstruct any episode of the saga or any movie and see exactly kind of what kinds of, you know, even going down to like maybe phrases that were popular at the time and find them in there if you're really looking for it. I'm sure you could. But it's certain things like it just like not going out of your way to say something that is like, that's exactly what you would say right now in 2019. Okay. That's kind of what gets to me.
The late 90s like were that. Known for their ass.
Yeah, it's like, because you don't, anyway, but I understand that a lot of people don't care, but I have a feeling that, like me, there is a line that could be crossed for them, and, you know, just have, look upon me with pity, because I was once like you.
I would debate that, but anyway.
I think for me, it sort of depends who's saying it. Like, when I'm watching this, For me, because I'm so familiar with Bill Burr, I'm already just watching Bill Burr be in Star Wars, and I think that amuses me, and it's already, to be frank, takes me out of it a little bit. So I'm fine with him just being Bill Burr. If you give that line to another actor, like an actor I don't know and don't have any affection for, it might not work for me.
What if it was like Krennic saying to Tarkin, "Get off my ass"?
Well, I mean,
and Tarkin's like, you shouldn't have invited me in.
Matters,
Krennic wouldn't say that.
Yeah. So, actually, what I kind of dislike on like a nerd level, dislike more than that is just the idea that stormtroopers can't shoot. That's like a meta thing. That's not a real. Like, if stormtroopers can't shoot, then don't use them as your bad guys anymore because they're not threatening. Like, you have to at least pretend, like, in this galaxy, if you're here, you're scared of stormtroopers. They can kill you.
Yeah, I think it's like a catch-22 of if there wasn't that whole meta fan thing about it, it could just be a diss on the grunt military of the Empire, but it's sort of... It's kind of your real world knowledge of people joking about Stormtrooper, but it's clouding the line for you. You're making it meta, Robert. It's your fault.
Well, if you listen to this week's Blue Harvest, that's exactly what I said, is that I choose to interpret it as he's saying like, well, it's like saying like, oh, I was in the National Guard. It's like, okay. Like a lot of people are in the National Guard. Like that doesn't mean you're like a badass. I'm not dissing
uniformed service members in
the National Guard. They're all great, and we owe them so much, and et cetera. But I just made that sound even more dismissive. I'm going to stop now.
Can you stop using the word ass? You're dating the podcast, Robbo. I'm trying to make this timeless. Robbo. Oh, Skeletor's zooming in. Oh, my God, that is... frightening. Pixelated.
The look of disapproval, Steel. Shaking his head.
This is great for everybody listening for the audio version.
Yeah, we'll get some views. That's some top sizzle. I did like how the Mandalorian said to Ran, how can you trust it about the droid Zero? And he's like, you can't trust anyone, or whatever the line was. But I sort of like those sort of things that sets up the dog-eat-dog world of the underworld. I think that's really cool. What did you guys think of the New Republic prison ship? Just the set and how they pretty convincingly used the same hall 63 times.
Yep. In grand Star Wars tradition, you've got like two intersecting hallways and you shoot it from 12 different angles.
They're really wide hallways. It seems an inefficient use of your space.
I kind of like the subtle callbacks to the Corvette, the blockade runner design, where it's got this like matte black floor that gets dirty very easily, kind of laid out in slabs because that's just what they had. And but it's a little bit updated because the Corvettes are probably like the design seems to be older than the Empire itself. So if you were going to make a new one, a prison ship, then it would look slightly newer. And it does. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, I thought the ship was like sort of Star Warsy, but a little bit fresh. The scene with the Mandalorian and the droids, how he goes around they all think they've bailed on him, or he's bailed on them, and then he comes around the back and they sort of hold off helping and just watch him dismantle all the droids. That was I'm a fan of a rope around a droid's head to decapitate it. It's good times.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a, in terms of like the efficacy of droids in combat in Star Wars, there's like a conservation of like killing ability, where the more droids are on the screen at one time is inversely proportional to the usefulness of those droids. You know what I mean? Like if you got one droid out there and he's just on a hunt, like watch out because he'll kill everybody, right? But if you've got six droids on the screen, they can't hit a damn thing. And if you've got an entire army of droids, you might as well just like set up a beach chair and watch because they're not going to hurt you.
Who's the single really dangerous droid that you refer to?
IG-11. He kills like 40 people.
Good point. But is he sort of like an illegal droid? Is he street legal?
It's not entirely clear whether either of the two death droids we've met are legal. It seems like they aren't.
In the EU, I think they were not.
I mean, go ahead, Emily.
Well, I mean, Star Wars is never entirely sure how droids work.
No.
Because, I mean, here you have this criminal droid that Richard Iowati is voicing, and I mean, that seems weird.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, look, going back to Star Wars, the motion picture, right? Like there's a suggestion that there's something wrong with, there's something
Star Wars,
about
the motion picture.
I didn't invent that, man. You got to Pete the retailer to thank for that.
Okay.
Tell him next time you see him, if it hasn't already happened. I think that that movie suggested already with like, you know, we don't serve their kind here. Like there's some prejudice against droids suggests that like something bad happened involving droids at some point because you don't see them in combat roles in those movies, really, with I guess the exception perhaps of the probe droid. But really all it was doing was defending itself. So
two sides. There's two sides to every battle. It was just defending itself. It shouldn't have been probing. It should have learned that lesson.
It was doing what it was told to do. I mean, it's more like, you know, droids are shown to be capable of defending themselves in some small way, but you don't see in the original trilogy droids doing anything lethal. I don't think. So anyway, but like the point is like there were suggestions that that's like possibly why people had a prejudice against them is because at some point droids were like tearing stuff up. And then in the prequels, that was kind of established. And in this show, it's definitely established because they show battle droids actually hurting people. So it's like it makes sense that people, you know, that kind of thing. So I would guess that it is highly illegal. And even Duck Dynasty says the same thing. Like, oh, he's, you know, you got to forgive him. He's a little, you know, we reprogrammed him. He's a little bit off, but he gets the job done or whatever. Tom, what do you remember from this? Like, am I getting this all backwards or?
I think you're on to something. It felt like was it Zero?
Yes.
Was that the name? It felt like he was 90% of the time more competent than everyone else, especially when piloting the ship, because he handled it in a way that no one ever could. You know, not a combination of Han, Poe, and Rey and Anakin could handle a ship the way he did. But then at the same time, at the end of the episode, he lost Baby Yoda and let the Mando get a drop on him.
Yeah, it's like, I think at the end of the day, in Star Wars, like, droids are basically humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could sneak up on a droid the same way you sneak up on a human, because the average, like, person in the audience, Joe Bag of Donuts or whatever, doesn't think about that. It's like, well, if he's a droid, like, how come he can't, like, sense, like, the change in, like, temperature, the slight variations when somebody is closer to him? That doesn't work that way. Just like, why can't the speeder bike troops, like, radio back to their base for help? Why do they, like, we've seen people, let's go race back to the base and tell them in person.
Don't they, like, jam their comms?
They would say that.
Yeah, jam their comm like center switch.
With what?
When Luke and Leia were on the speeder bikes.
Oh, they jammed him with, but that was after they got on the bikes.
Well, they had to get on the bikes to get away from them.
But they were already trying to get, they were already, like, chasing them rather than immediately going, we spotted some rebels.
Maybe they were out of range.
I don't believe it for a second. You could try. No, you'd chase them. You could send people messages in space.
You'd chase them straight away. You wouldn't call first. You'd chase.
Yes, you call.
No, because you'd lose them. At the end of the call, they'd be like, woo.
Then one of you chases them and the other one calls.
Oh, you can't
or
split up.
You multitask and call while you're chasing them.
And then you crash into a tree and die.
They did that anyway. They shouldn't have been in They shouldn't have had those things in the forest anyway. That was a stupid idea.
Oh,
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's the single worst environment to have mounted scout patrols on super fast hover bikes.
Yeah,
it's
but
the
you know,
worst place. They have zero peripheral vision. They have no idea what's happening.
You know why it's not the worst place? Because it looks freaking awesome.
Because it's the best place.
Right. That's the point. Like, you're not supposed to, like, it.
Not supposed to be bravo about it.
No, you're not. Like, my point is, like, if you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. Like, if you think about how can you sneak up on a droid, like, how could they not notice this? It doesn't make any sense.
But you don't know what sensors, like, what, like, little things they have, little antennas. You can't speak for them.
Like, do you think a droid sees in, like, regular vision or sees in, like, heat vision? And why wouldn't you have eyes in the back of the droid's head?
Yeah, but they
don't. I don't think all the droids see in the same way. There's very many different kinds of droids. They have different abilities because they were made to do different things.
If I were going to build a droid who could shoot and kill people, and that was what I wanted the droid to do, I would make sure that droid knew when someone was behind the droid.
Was he built for that purpose?
He had a gun. I wouldn't give a droid a gun unless you expected him to do stuff like that.
Well, no, but I mean, but was that what he was built for?
So maybe he wasn't built for any of that. I think he was a protocol droid that's been, like, mangled and tangled up and.
Yeah, so why does a protocol droid need to know if somebody's sneaking up on him? Who's sneaking up on a protocol droid?
Ah.
So maybe they gave him the gun, but didn't put the eyes in the back of his head.
I mean, working on a budget here. There's only many different programs you can give the droid.
Well, I didn't need a logical explanation, but you gave one to me. Thank you. Kudos. You get a Robbo gold star.
God, Robbo just got droid-splained.
Hey, how many dorks do you know on the internet who are like me and will be like, hey, you made a good point. Accepted. Yeah, zero. Except for me.
I think Robbo is giving himself a gold star.
Yes.
Oh, it's tattooed on my forehead. You can't get it off. There's no off position on the Robbo switch.
Oof.
Where were we in this episode?
I don't know.
So they end up getting to the control room, and Matt Lanter's in there with a toilet seat on his head.
Didn't they call him Egghead or something?
I don't know, but I don't know if they called him Egghead, but Bill Burr...
Space Bill Burr did, yes.
Amazingly yeah. said, nice shoes.
So good.
They match his belt.
I guarantee you that was an ad lib, and they're like, oh, no, we're going to shoot that again. And then Rick... I'm going to mess this up. Fumiua?
Rick McCallum?
No.
Dude.
The good Rick.
Oh.
He's directed my two favorite episodes of the show so far, so he's definitely earned the good Rick.
It's a disturbing nickname when you think about it.
I don't. So, yeah, you know, he told the cameraman, like, oh, wait, no. He's going to say, nice shoes. I want you to pan down to his shoes, then pan back up to his terrified face. And that's, it looks so good. Like, it's so funny. Because you would never write that line in the script unless you knew exactly what the costume was like. Right? This seems unlikely. He's like, nice shoes. Matches your belt. That's an ad lib for sure, right?
You could write in a line. Note to wardrobe, give the characters nice shoes and a belt that matches.
You could. I just don't think that's likely. It seems like to me like that's something that was ad-libbed on the set because...
Okay, on the one hand, I can totally see that being a Bill Burr ad-lib or a line. On the other hand, this was written by the guy who wrote Thor Ragnarok,
I believe. Oh, the co-writer was?
Yeah, Chris... Yost, that's what I think.
Okay.
And that movie has lots of jokes in it. So
it also has lots of ad libs, but yeah, you're right. Like it would be right, perfectly in place, right?
Yeah.
In Thor, none of Bill Burr's lines were scripted.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
He did a really good job with all that ad lib, and he did.
I didn't say ad lib any lines either. Not in it.
He just showed up, and for some reason the cameras are rolling, and they kept the takes.
But
the background eating a Twinkie.
I love that control room scene with Clone Wars Anakin Skywalker. The standoff, and then Harley Quinn just solving it. I kind of like the brutalness of the Mandalorian world where he doesn't want to kill anyone, but then once someone's dead, he's like, well, what am I going to do?
What are you going to do? Like, it's over. You're complaining about it's not going to bring that dude back. It's not going to pull the knife out of his carotid artery. It's there for good.
And then they, in the control room, they find out where the their prisoner is. And they open it up, and it's one of the most impressive foreheads in all of Star Wars of Quinn, who's Harley Quinn's, funnily enough, brother. Is that a coincidence?
Yes.
I hope so.
Okay. All right. Then they push him into the prison thing. The cell, and they race off, and then
I don't think they raced. It didn't feel like they raced because the if they raced, the Mandalorian got out of that cell in record time.
How do you mean?
It just felt like, if they were at the cell trying to get back to the ship, they were sure taking their sweet time doing it because, the Mandalorian had to wait for a droid to walk by, had to take the arm off, the droid, take the arm off the droid, gimmick the lock to open up. And then I think he went and closed the doors on them. So either they took their time or time moved slower in whatever gravitational well the hallways they were walking down.
Yeah, well, that actually something that I should have mentioned. Matt Lanta had the little tracking device that the whole thing was over, and the premise of that is once it's pressed, the New Republic comes to save the day, and much like The Last Jedi, Robbo, as I say, one of my catchphrase critiques.
Can I do it this time?
The bringing up
I could do it pretty good.
All right.
Okay, so much like The Last Jedi, they introduce a ticking clock, and then they don't actually – they seems like they accomplish way too much within that time period, and it would have been better if they had not actually said how much time it will take.
Well –
right.
I'm actually.
Is that not exactly what you were going to say?
I'm going to defend Steele on this one, and here's why. Which is, when they give the time left, it is almost exactly how much time left is left in the episode. And I thought, oh, we're just going to go to real time the rest of this episode, and that's awesome.
Jack Bauer style.
And I think they did, though.
I feel like it doesn't really work out. Like, it felt like longer than the 21 minutes that they added or something like that.
The suspense made it feel longer. No, it's like, the question is like, did the X-Wing trio, like, did they show up first at the prison ship and then follow the beacon to the space station, which I think is must have been what they did.
I had a theory about that, but I could save it for when we get to that part of the episode.
I mean, they're also like in hyperspace for like all of 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it seems like it, or less. So it's
don't say the time.
Yeah,
it's just like, it's like, they're coming. Great. And you don't know, like, then you don't know whether if they're lollygagging, gallivanting around the hallways is fine because it's like 3 days until they come, or it's 10 minutes. Just not bringing it up.
No, because if you don't know whether it's 3 days or 10 minutes, then you don't know how worried you should be that they're going to get caught.
You're worried.
Like, the whole point – no, you won't. The whole point of this is you set up a ticking clock and you're like, oh, they've got to move fast. That means, like, whatever he does to escape and, like, get his revenge – like, he turns the tables on his oppressors, right? It's my favorite thing you can ever do in genre fiction is, like you turn the tables. Like, now you've pissed off the wrong – person, like, they're gonna get you now, like, you're in their world now. It's like First Blood style.
I love it how my thing I want is the run-in and you want the table turn.
Yes, the table turn is my favorite thing.
Ticking clock or no ticking clock, I mean, I've liked all this episode. The last half of this episode is so great when he's just hunting them down and picking them off.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm. They do a real good job as well of sort of, like, for Bill Burr's character, they hadn't really shown, like, what sort of fighter he is. So before he comes into contact with the Mandalorian, he has to take down a few droids, and it sort of shows his prowess. Same with the... is it the Devorian? Is that what species mm-hmm. he is?
Clancy
yeah.
Brown.
Yeah, body slamming those yes. Those two droids.
Oh.
That was so great.
And
those droids back.
No, but how good was it? The shot of him with his, like, sort of just just standing in front of the blast. That was great
the
80s
the fire
action.
In his face.
Yes, yes. No. Not when the Mandalorian flame flew him. He like body slams. He, like, press slams a droid into another droid and it all explodes, and then he turns around and there's a shot of him sort of claiming victory and there's just all explosions behind him. Very good. I also would be remiss if we didn't mention that that shot that when the Mandalorian shot that prison droid in the head and then you had the camera angle through the head.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, professional directors, they get the job done.
We'll talk directors at the end of the episode. But the picking off, even how cliche the sort of flashing light and then someone coming closer with each flash, how cliche that is. I'm almost sure it's been done in The Simpsons 27 times.
They made the Mandalorian Jason Voorhees. That's awesome.
But a Jason that you're, like, fully rooting for. Because I've never rooted for Jason.
I'm always rooting for Jason.
I know, I'm terrified.
What? Dude,
that's the whole point of those movies. Nobody goes to see him like, I hope that Dirk Walder or whatever that kid's name is going to be the one who like kills Jason halfway through the movie.
That's why all the characters in slashers are made to be obnoxious so that you're happy when they get killed horribly.
Nah, no bias. That's why I don't watch them, because okay. I'm so okay. upset for the, like, I'm like, oh, that sucks that they all got killed. Like, especially when it always bummed me out when I was little, when they just hooked up and then they get killed. It's like, you've put in all that groundwork. You get to hook up and then
that's the whole point.
Yeah. Well, that's like, why I can't watch it. Cause it's so upsetting.
You get like, you know, like a little bit of nudity and titillation and all that, and then they die and you've got like all your bases covered. Hmm. Like, these are very cynical movies, these slasher films.
Hmm. So he ends up sort of picking everyone off seemingly. Now, I have to say that Devorian,
how did he live through that?
I know he was sort of holding his face at the end when he was in the cell, but
his horns were broken. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not. Okay. Well, that's great.
Okay. That makes it better.
Yeah.
So it's like he was pulling his head out of the way as the blast doors were shutting. And so it just pulverized his horns. But yeah, I mean, when you watch it, and if you watch it in slow-mo, I guarantee you see those blast doors close on him. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make, you know, cause they didn't animate him getting squished, of course, but they animated the doors closing right where he was. So yeah. I kind of wish they would have just let him die, because like, why, you know, like yeah. you gotta have, like, you can't do that and just like, oh, he just so happened to live and stay unconscious long enough for the bando to like drag this hulking dude into a cell. Mm. So, you know, like I feel like he probably could have died, cause I don't really care if he comes back. He was great. Mr. Krabs, awesome. But, what's he going to do when he comes back? The same thing, you know, whereas the other two characters have a little bit more like menace to them.
Yeah. What does the Mandalorian, I'm just trying to think, has he killed that many people in the show?
Are Jawas people?
No.
Stormtroopers and other bounty hunters.
Jawas are people.
Jawas are people.
The way it's played, it's not. It's like he's shooting rabbits.
If you have to negotiate with them to get your stuff back, they're people.
If you enjoy eggs that much, you're a person in my book.
Oh, and also, he knows their language. They're if you can.
Okay, all right.
You can't negotiate with a goldfish. You know, it's different.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of that thing of, They're on the fence. You forget about them. I understand. I understand.
People in the bar, right? In the first episode, in the bar scene, he's killing some of those dudes, right?
Yeah, he cuts off what's his name's head, and well, I guess he doesn't have a name, but he's a
squid head.
Squid head. Mm-hmm. Cuts off a squid head's head, and kills that other dude. But those are people who are messing with him.
Yeah, because he's.
In film language, that doesn't count, I guess.
Yeah, because...
But the Jawas are just doing their Jawa thing.
Yeah.
They don't seem to care too much that he does it.
Yeah, right.
Like, he's right in the front seat of their car, like, 2 minutes later.
Yeah, because it's quite cartoony that, you know, he's not really killing... Like, I thought, and I think... Everyone watching it thought that he was killing all the Suicide Squad. And then at the end, it's revealed that they're just in a cell, which is quite a, I don't know, like a...
Yeah, if you kill the Jawas for stealing your stuff and you don't kill these people for trying to murder you,
I feel like I can buy it with her, because they had this romantic fling or whatever, or at least have this past. But I mean, he doesn't know Bill Burr. Does he know Clancy Brown?
No.
And they
doesn't
don't
seem like it. No,
because I couldn't remember whether they knew each other and didn't like each other, or whether they were just meeting. But he doesn't know or particularly these other guys,
because he was saying about how he was tiny.
That's right.
I mean, but he it's true. I mean, I don't think it's entirely clear whether he did have much of a relationship with Knife Lady. I think that like it's more like she knows that he's not going to say anything no matter what she says, and she just like makes the most of it because she likes being weird. And like, you don't know, like it's meant to be open, because there's like, if they had a relationship, like what was he just like leave his helmet on or something? Like, well,
that's what it seems like, but a lady doesn't tell apparently.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's like how much of a relationship could they have had? I don't know. I'm just,
what does everybody else think Mandalorians are? Because Bilber, and I know that the maybe he's a Gungan under there is a joke, but it's still
what about
implies...
his, what about Bilber's impersonation, like racist jokes?
It's great, but it still implies that he's thinking of Mandalorians more as like a religion rather than a species or a nationality.
Tom, I mean, I think that's what the show thinks of them as. For sure.
From watching Rebels and the Clone Wars, I am under the impression that they are a group of somewhat related humans or near humans that control a sector or a number of planets, and they in turn have colonized other planets, other systems.
But they have like a tradition,
so,
right?
Right.
Like,
so it's both an ethnic and a cultural lineage, and they have adopted others into the fold, so to speak.
So you could be a Gungan Mandalorian.
That's what the impression I'm getting from what they're talking about with the foundlings.
Yeah, unless they're straight up racist. Yeah, because like, why would they be like humans only?
No, but
if they just adopt people,
if they live by the code. Now, these are different than the Mandalorians we've seen in the Clone Wars and in Rebels. And I think we're all hoping that the show at some time explains that.
I'm not. So like, well, yeah. Like, what if it's just like this? It's like, if your head doesn't fit in the helmet, you can't be a Mando. Look, we're not, like, we don't make the rules. Like, we're just saying, like, you've got to wear the helmet to be a Mando.
They literally do make the rules. They're rules.
No, this is the way. That's the whole thing is, like, I'm not taking responsibility for these rules. Like,
yeah, but the armorer's helmet has horns. They can make different helmets.
Yes, but the helmet is exactly like the circumference that it is. Like, it's not like you see like longer helmets for like, you know, yak faces. They're all the same size. So you either fit in that or you don't. Like, a Twi'lek cannot be a Mandalorian because they, unless you can, or you're allowed to cut holes in the helmet. Or like have like head tail socks that are attached to it. I don't know. Like, what?
I mean, that does actually sound pretty racist.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, it's like, look, we don't exclude other people who aren't humans, but if you can't fit your head into the helmet, what are we going to do? Like, it's the helmet's the helmet.
God. I thought it was like being like Jewish, like where you can convert or
you have to like, I want to be a Mandalorian rabbi, and they like deny you three times before they allow you to join.
But there also is like the planet of Mandalore that has this long cultured history. I mean, I don't know Rebels, but I do know that was some of the only stuff in Clone Wars that I liked. And that's where we get like Death Watch and stuff.
Death Watch.
Where it was, you have this ancient tradition that the modern Mandalorians have gone away from. And again, they have the planet of Mandalore.
And they take their helmets off all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just throwing this out there, what if the cartoons don't matter all that much?
But
crazy?
You can't say they're canon and then never do anything to reconcile that difference.
Oh, sure, you can like throw out like a comic book or something and reconciles it.
I don't care
and, like,
how they do it. I don't even care if it's stupid. I just want some sort of acknowledgement that this is a very different thing than what we knew before.
I think with Dave and Favreau doing The Mandalorian, we will get that, because there's no way those two are going to forget or ignore the cartoons.
Yeah, they're like the two most obvious people that would explain that, being that you know, they...
They make no effort in the show so far. I don't think it matters to even them anymore. Like, the point is to make a cool show and have a cool thing, and the ideas in the cartoons about the Mandalorians are not really cool enough. They're just like another group of...
Whoa. I'm not going to have you besmirch Death Watch like that.
Death Watch.
All right, I'm out. I don't know how Steel feels, but I'll assume I'm outnumbered. But
no, I just think there's no way that there's not going to be some reason. Like,
you think there's any way that the reason's not going to be terrible?
Oh,
because I don't.
Hey, if they do it great, you know, if they do a good job.
Yeah, by all means. Yeah,
if they do it right. Yeah, do it right. I don't know. So he ends up fake killing them all, and then he catches up with what's that dude's name again?
Quinn,
Dr. Quinn, and then which I really liked. He said, "Well, isn't your code just to do your job? So take me in," and sort of played on that, which I found some good action. And then they go back, he gets paid, somehow leaves the beacon or a beacon on Quinn, and then the X-Wings, and we'll talk about who was in the X-Wings in a second, but it was very exciting to see X-Wings. But the whole...
Yep.
It did time out very well with that gunship coming up, but yeah, I found I was so excited to see X-Wings, but the scripting, and I'm not sure if it was coupled with, it was all the directors, and I wouldn't have recognized the other two directors, but Dave Filoni just may as well have had his cowboy hat on over that that X-Wing.
Did you catch his character name, Steel?
It's something about, like, the little wolves or what, or something, surely, isn't it?
No. Well, not exactly, no.
What is it?
I know what wolves are, but
the wolves. His,
wolves.
Okay, wolves. Okay, so yes, his the character's name is Trapper Wolf.
Ugh. And he is about as good of an actor as he is a director.
The sad thing is the take they used of "there looks like they're launching a gunship." I think that must have been their best take, because it wasn't him directing it, so it's not like somebody you didn't know better put it in there. It's like a good director is like, this is what we got to work with here. this is it. Like, there's no amount of movie magic that can make that into a better line read. They should have had Deborah Chow read it, because she only said one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, okay, whatever. And I know people are very excited about it, which does have a tendency to make it sting even more. But, yeah, I just thought it was just way too, it's just him sitting there. It was like,
my thing about the X-Wing scene is that they used the same shot of the X-Wing pilots that they used in the original trilogy, a very front-on in-cockpit shot, when in the prequel trilogy in Starfighters and in the sequel trilogy, we've gotten all these inventive side shots or through a window, and they didn't go with any of those. They just went with this very static same shot for all three of them, and that just felt weird to me.
It's, yeah, cheaper. Plus, and, like, if the director just, like, I just want to do it like this because I don't feel like being more distracting than it already is. Like,
yeah.
How can you argue with that? Like, I agree. Like, I get, like, I like how, you know, they've kind of mixed that up lately, because you don't have to just have them straight ahead in the cockpit. But if you want to, like, evoke the feeling, like, you want the viewer to be like, oh, this is the rebellion and what they're up to now. They're not the rebels anymore, but they're still kind of the same people because it hasn't been that long. That's the shot you go with. And it's also has the benefit, I think, of being way cheaper than animating more shots of a ship flying by and a head moving inside of it. That's got to be tricky.
Yeah. And as far as timing and how they ended up there, I had the idea that what if before leaving the jail, the Mandalorian cut a deal with them and let them know, hey, this crew attacked. I will take you back to their home base if you let me go. And that's why he put the tracker on the one guy before giving him back to Duck Dynasty.
Not feeling it. Not feeling that at all.
I feel like they just follow, like, they got two signals, and so either they, like, the first team, there was, like, two teams, and one team went to go. That's probably what would have happened, realistically. It's like one team would have gone to investigate the original location of the tracker, and the other one is going, you know, out to see where it went. And you notice that the show doesn't say that they destroy the entire platform. They shoot parts of it and blow up the gunship.
No, they go back for seconds.
No, they're taking out the weapon systems. If you play the X-Wing computer games, you would know this.
Oh.
No, that's exactly how it works. It's like...
But you said it in... It was almost like you were parodying yourself. If you played the X-Wing video games, you would know this. Like, you've become a Simpsons character, Robbo.
I'm well aware that the joke was on me there. I just wanted to say it because I thought it was funny.
Okay, good. Yeah, I thought they were a little bit ruthless, but there's something I wonder if I didn't recognize Dave Filoni, if I would have, it would have been so jolting, but it was delectable to have the little surprise of the X-Wings. And
it was.
I would have liked it if, again, Robbo, they didn't mention time and he just had the buzzer that Matt Lanter had the whole time and they've just followed him there. I'd find that a more plausible scenario.
There's always a balancing act between what's plausible and what is more entertaining, what has a more visceral effect on the audience. And yeah, it's a tricky balance. I'll give you that, Steele.
I don't think my version would change any visceral reaction.
I think it would. I think that if you don't know, because you have the whole situation with, like, they'll be here in like 20 minutes. And then you're like, we only need five. But then you know it's going to take more than five because the Bando has to escape and, like, track him down. It's like, how is he going to do it? And the whole time they're ratcheting up the tension, right? Because the viewer keeps that in the back of their mind. So it's not like The Last Jedi where they just kind of tell you, we've got this amount of fuel left and we can do this. And then somebody does something and you're like, well, how does that fit into it? I think that was a little bit more clumsy. I think in this show, it just established that, no, they, like, stuff has to happen really quickly, but that's what makes it interesting to watch, is because everybody's going to be in a hurry. They're not just going to be sauntering back to their ship. Everybody's got to move quickly. When they get separated, they've got to decide, like, you know, that was kind of confusing. What were they like? Did they remember where they parked, or, you know, that I couldn't quite tell. But the idea of, like, when you set up a ticking clock like that, which is something that Uncle George was quite fond of doing. In fact, we wouldn't have gotten a second Death Star if it were not for his fondness for that idea. It's documented historical fact, by the way. It's not a Robboism. It's reality. And the benefit of it is that it keeps it. The audience, I think, really responds to it. I don't think it worked quite the same way in The Last Jedi, and that may have soured you on the idea. But in this show, I think it worked just fine because they didn't do anything in particular that, you know, up until the point where he leaves the ship.
All right, Robert, could you give me an hour?
No, it's got to be, because it's got to match up with how much time the audience feels like is left before the episode ends. And especially in a streaming show, they can see how much time is left if they really want to. So I really, even more so than a movie, because in a movie, you're going to be compressing a lot of time. But in a TV episode, you can't compress time the same way as easily. I'm just saying, I think there's some, you know, TV magic at work here, and you got to respect it.
All right.
Can we talk about my favorite part of the episode? Zero is hunting Baby Yoda. And don't even, I can see you almost saying it, Steele, and don't.
Say what?
The Mandalorian shoots him from behind and Baby Yoda just looks at his hand. And the fact that they managed to give the puppet the expression of what did I just do is brilliant.
that scene with Baby Yoda, Yoju, if you will, was, as a father, I it was exactly my life, except it was green with ears. Like when they do something or think they do something and they're like, oh, like that was, there is a, that Yoju, he's a great man. And another trope of the show, the unexpected shoot in the back, which I think,
like that one.
I think this is number three so far.
I think I've got a better like drinking game type thing to watch out for here, Steele.
Oh, no. I wouldn't use that as a drinking game. I'm not having one drink every like 2.5 episodes. That is.
Well, you could up the alcohol intake if you need to. No. Like it's all on a sliding scale.
Okay, great.
But I would say like the better one for just like take a shot when X happens, like I would go like the Mando gets hit in the shoulder. That happens at least twice per episode.
Or when the Mandalorian is a terrible babysitter.
Yeah, that's every episode for sure.
It does make you wonder how he got by before he got the new suit. Yeah. Just getting pelted daily.
In this episode, he manages to shoot himself in the shoulder.
So I was talking to my friend this weekend, and he said when he watched the first episode and the Mandalorian is getting the bounty for Baby Yoda, he was, for whatever reason,
Yoju,
convinced that the bounty was going to be Wedge Antilles. Like 100% sure. He has no idea why he thought this. It just popped into his head. And so now whenever there's a Baby Yoda scene, I just think of that same scene, but with Wedge Antilles. And it's the most delightful way to watch the show. Just Wedge Antilles sipping his little bone broth. All the kids seeing Wedge Antilles sitting on a cart and crowding around him talking.
Ah, and then we'd have kid bored by Wedge Antilles. That would be even more offensive.
The dude in the jumpsuit. It's bogus.
Wow. I'd love Bill Burr looking at Wedge Antilles and going, is that a pet?
Did you two make this?
Something like that. So the Mando takes the Razor Crest into hyperspace and unscrews the little knob for Yoju to play with, which again is very true to my life. This show could not have come along at a more apt time in my entire history as a human.
You're in the please refrain from tasting the knob stage of parenthood.
Yes. All. Yeah.
To me, when I look at Yoju handling that knob, I'm thinking like that kid can swallow that knob. Like that is a stupid thing to give that kid.
They can also swallow whole frogs, so it's probably not that big of a deal.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but frogs are squishy. The knob is yeah, okay. That's true.
Would Wedge Antilles choke on the knob?
I'm just picturing Wedge like playing like gleefully with like a little metal ball. And
Wedge Antilles with a half of a frog hanging out of his mouth.
Would you know what? Also speaking of Wedge, would Werner Herzog eat Wedge Antilles?
Yes. Probably.
Probably.
I mean, he'd make a whole documentary out of it, but once he got the funding, yeah.
Let's hit some scores and some final thoughts. Let's go with you, King of All Toms.
9.25.
What? What is the difference between a 9 and a 9.25, King Tom?
I like the 9.25 a little bit better. Because I don't remember if I rated the last one I was on, if I rated it a 9 or an 8.5 or an 8. So I just want to say this one is a little better than the last one that I was on.
Okay, how does it rate in, like, what's your favorite episode thus far?
Probably this one. Either this one or the third episode or the fourth episode. The one with all the Mandos coming in or the one on the where they made the shrimp beer.
Thoughts on episode 5, King Tom?
Episode 5 was the Tatooine one?
Yeah.
Yes.
I enjoyed the the first part of the Tatooine callbacks, I was in a very emotional place when I first saw it. So that part hit me probably more than it should have. The story wasn't that great, but I still liked it a lot. There were just some parts of the episode that felt weird.
I watched, I rewatched it last night while we were eating dinner to get ready for the next one. And I can't remember that character's name, but I love him. I adore him. I think he's great. R.I.P. to the poor man's Dash Rendar. Love him. Love him. All right.
You can't be the poor man's Dash Rendar without shoulder pads.
But that's why he's poor.
I want to know who Dash Rendar's Dash Rendar is. That's who I want to meet.
That's Han Solo.
No. Because Dash Rendar is
Han
Solo's
no.
Dash Rendar. You're getting into like tautologies here. We're not talking about like who's the Billy Joel of rock and roll. You know what I mean? Like it's, I'm saying like it's like who is the wannabe Dash Rendar?
This dude.
Yeah, that's this what I'm guy? Saying.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's I guess I didn't want to meet him after all. Yeah. I withdraw my comment.
Okay. Back in court. Emily, a score and some final thoughts.
10 out of 10. Loved it. So much fun. Favorite episode so far. Not the best episode so far. Favorite episode so far. Clancy Brown, Mark Britton Jr., Richard Iowati, Bill Burr. Awesome.
Excellent. Excellent. Rubbo.
So I didn't get to rank episode 2, but I would put that one at a 9. And so I would put this one because I don't like splitting up. I like whole numbers. So I put this one at an 8.
Oof. So you're rounding down, I'm guessing.
I mean, it's probably closer to 9 than it is to 8. So if I had to, I would say like. I just
You'd
don't
say
like
an 8.75.
Like a perfect 10 to me is like Star Wars, the motion picture.
that's very funny. Is that yours?
What do you mean?
Did you coin that?
No, I didn't. That's Pete the Retailer. You've offended him twice now. I don't know why. Like, look, if you're listening, Pete the Retailer, I'm cheap. I work cheap. I don't command the big appearance fees that Hollywood Steel does. And I actually remember your jokes. Now, I think that this one, the only thing that I didn't like about this one was more like the tropiness of it was a little bit much. Like I could have done without, like my favorite character, I'll admit, was the Twi'lek knife lady.
Really? And
the favorite new character introduced. Yes.
I thought you were going to hate her.
I would if the actress weren't so excellent at what she does. And she was in Game of Thrones doing essentially the same character, almost exactly, just slightly less evil, but basically the same kinds of, but her delivery of her line just made it so much better. But I also love Bill Burr, like the way he, like, I love how he kind of hinted, like did a good job of tipping off that this guy isn't as badass and experienced as he pretends to be. Like when the Mando says, like, nobody has to, you don't have to die here. Like, he's like, what are you talking about? Of course he does. It's like, it's the last thing in the world he should say in that situation, but he says it. And I love that. He delivers it perfectly. But yeah, I think Knife Lady is my favorite just because, like, look, I love a good character actor part is great. And that's like, she's so good at what she does. Like, she is a pro. But I also think like Bill Burr like has a future in this business. If he wants to do more shows like this, like he's actually really good, like very convincing and threatening when he has to be.
I thought his tone was just perfect. I absolutely loved it. And I'm very confident that he'll be in season 2. So
yeah, I think that's exactly why they survived, is that as they were writing or filming the episode, perhaps even that late, somebody was like, you know what? We're doing a second season. Like, we shouldn't kill all these characters. Like, they could come back. It would mean something. So that was good.
Yeah. I just don't think they want him to be, you know, they can allude to his past, but I don't think they want him to be this, like, bloodthirsty. Like, I sort of think it's, like, a bit of grateful Disneyfication of it. That is
the Mando or Bill Burr?
No, the Mando.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's, like, you can't have him be a hero and have him, like, kill a guard on a ship in cold blood, right? That was the whole point. Like, that's, you know, there was the other thing I liked about this episode is not something you would understand, Steel, but if you listen to Blue Harvest Adventures, you would probably recognize some things that just happened to be almost exactly like one of the things that happened to the characters in that show, in that game. So I can think of two, actually, but not like it was like it's just because there's only so many things you can do. Of course, that's the real reason for the coincidence, but I enjoy just the freakishness of those two things happening in the same episode.
I feel like this is my most surprising liked episode. Like, it was something that I hadn't really imagined that we'd get like that sort of episode with that sort of comedy. So I think this is my, I like the Tatooine episode still just for its a pure tribute, but this could be my, I feel like this is the best episode that is my favorite. And I would give it a 10 because I think it's a perfect, like, third last episode, like in its place in the series. It's really good. But the X-Wing bit at the end was so weird that I'm going for a 9.5, you guys. 9.5. Hard but fair. Hard but fair.
Dave Filoni screwing things up again.
I know. I know.
I didn't say it.
I still resent him for those Hela Savers. So, and, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But, like, where do you think the last two episodes are going to take us?
Well, we already know there's like a major character who hasn't showed up yet. And it's looking ever more likely that Boba Fett is like just a one-off gag that's never going to come back in the show. So,
oh, I don't know. I reckon season two finale, it's a Boba versus Mando face-off.
One reason I have a hard time answering that question of where is this going is, When did they know they were getting a season two? And then, like, there's no, like, we know when it was officially announced, but when they knew in terms of how much things are going to get wrapped up in two episodes.
I don't think we know.
No. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying is we can't, there's no way of knowing that. They haven't talked about that. And so I don't know how much of an ending we're going to get.
I think that the last or one of the final minutes of the show of this season is going to be Yoju getting reunited with older Yojus.
They call them Yodas.
No, they're Yoda species. I don't know what they're called. And all I hope is that they have the restraint not to have them like talk in backwards English.
Oh, please don't have them talk. Because how do you do that voice and have it?
It should be like E.T. getting reunited with the other E.T.s. That's what it should be like. It's like he finds them. But the reason, I'm not sure it'll happen because there's nothing that's been building to that. There's no like hint that I'm trying to get to such and such a place because something. Or even I'm trying to get to such and such a place.
Like, or even a remote, hey, maybe my goal should be to find his people.
Nothing, right? Like, if that's intentional and not just a horrible, horrible mistake, then that must mean that Yoji's going to be with him until season two. In which case, they must have known it from the beginning.
Well,
I just can't imagine.
Oh, sorry. Go, Tom.
I was just going to say, I just can't imagine they would leave that completely open for season two.
I kind of think it's the opening lead new series for Disney Plus, and they would have been pretty confident, like just out of stubbornness of, we're going to do another season of this. Like, I feel like it'd be a thing to like, to make sure the first one continues regardless. Because how are you going to judge, like,
true,
like midway, like what it, like ratings or like, it's not, I feel like, yeah, it's, they've just said, like, it's very likely we'd get another one, and then, or almost guaranteed. I feel like it would be written to be set up for another one because that's what they wanted.
Bobby, or it could have been written as like a 12 episodes season, and they're like, well, let's split it up and see what happens. Mm. And we'll throw Filoni a bone.
Bone and Filoni. All right. Well,
nope,
I guess we've got, well, what's the character's name that we're yet to see?
Moff Gideon.
Do you think Moff Gideon is going to be a 2-episode deal? Because I know it's like, it's sort of rad that these characters have been in and out so quick because we get more rad characters. But I sort of thought he'd be a character that went all the way through it.
I hope he's somebody who we will have continuing on into season 2, and I'd like to see Herzog again. I mean, frankly, at this point, I want to see another character again, just because I want to know somebody more than just the Mandalorian. I want other characters that when I see them, I go, oh, I know this person, and then I can get to know and like that character over time. I mean, that's one of the things you can do with a TV show, is develop like a long backstory and have lots of interconnected relationships that span multiple episodes. That's kind of the point of long form storytelling. And as much as I've liked most of The Mandalorian, man, I wish they were doing more of that.
In Space Carl Weathers, his return was foretold, but we haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, he survives. Like, if they were just going to get rid of him, he would have died.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Out of all the characters, which one would you like to come back in episode 8, the final finale? King Tom.
Cara Dune.
Emily.
You have to bring Herzog back as the guy who set up the whole thing.
Robbo.
Ugnaughty.
Ooh. I'm Cara Dune as well. So we win.
I feel like Ugnaughty should just be, he should just be in the show all the time.
I love Ugnaughty, by the way. I support you on this.
I didn't come up with it. I wish I did.
Oh, okay. Emily, where do you stand?
Better than Yoju.
Thank you. Got it. Got it out of her.
Is it counts even if I'm disparaging it?
Well, there's no other way that you're going to say it, so.
Well, I mean, what do you get to call him by his character's name, or you can call him by Nolte, or you can call him Ugnaughty. I don't think you have too many options here.
I mean, I still don't know how to pronounce his character's name, so.
Exactly.
Oh, worst.
Where I know how to pronounce Baby Yoda's character name, it is Baby Yoda.
Yoju. I'm going to edit it now. Now that I've got the soundbite, I'm going to go through, and every time you reference him.
She said it.
You have so much time on your hands as a father that that's what you're going to do.
Steele, just because she said that, what you need to do is record yourself saying, Yoju, like, you know, Mr. Black, and just have that go in every time she says.
It's going to be the best. King Tom, where can the good people of the internet track down your lording? Your royal internet presence.
I'm Tom Chansky on Twitter, although that is locked down until sometime Thursday evening, just for my own sanity's sake. But also, you can hear me on the Sith List. I believe there's a Blue Harvest Patreon episode coming out this week, the Bad Motivators Patreon, and Sworded Steel Wars shows.
Excellent. I had this idea for Page Wars. For people that don't know, Tom explains to me books and comics that I haven't read so I can keep up on canon. I feel like you should explain to me The Rise of Skywalker. Tell me the plot.
Is that how you want to experience it for the first time?
I am going to see it before that. So I figured you could just tell me the plot and I could see if I could work it out. I've got this childhood memory of seeing Return of the Jedi and then driving to pick up my dad for like an hour drive and just telling my brother everything that happened in the movie. He was just like, yeah, just tell me it all. So that's how he experienced Return of the Jedi. Emily Lind, you have a fantastic podcast called The Canto Bite Dispatch. I listen to it every week. Sometimes I feel bad about myself by the end. But this week I did pretty well with my FMK, I thought. So let the good people know.
Yeah, Canto Bite Dispatch, you know, it's on SoundCloud and Apple Podcasts and, you know, everywhere, like podcasts are. You can find it on Twitter, Canto Bite Pod, and I am on Twitter at EF Lind.
Excellent. Robbo.
Yeah, what's up? You might know me from the Canto Bite Dispatch theme song, and I guess I now have to put in Bill Burr saying, it looks like a Canto Bite slot machine.
Yes.
That needs to be added in there for somehow. I also have a podcast called Hardcore Gaming 101. It's a video game podcast. Not a lot of Star Wars going on there, but it's still pretty good. And, yeah, I'm on Twitter at GCINX, although, like King Tom, I won't be there very much until I see the movie.
Yeah, I had to run off today. I got the text that something bad was going around, so... And then, within the next 5 minutes, I opened up Twitter and went, like, you know, you sort of just do it when you've got, that's it.
You realize you have no control over your own brain.
Yes, that is it. That is it.
It's a horrifying thought.
It's, yeah, but true to life. You can follow me at Steel Wars. And if you want to support the podcast, you can join on Patreon for $3. You get all the bonus episodes. And tonight there's a new episode of The Juklun Strikes Back with Jackie being delighted to see, my wife Jackie, to see Bill Burr in The Mandalorian. And she tells a very funny story about a prank that Bill Burr played on her in Sydney. So that's some red hot sizzle there. So check that out. And for people wanting the Rise of Skywalker type podcasts, I think if I'm allowed, the first one will be up Tuesday night. So... here we go. I too am on lockdown, so don't at me until tomorrow. I'm very excited. I feel like I haven't been very excited, and now I'm like, I feel like 2 hours before I'm just going to explode. But how are you guys faring?
Nobody wants to go first.
I was going to let someone else go first.
Go, Robbo.
I think King Tom's just figuring out, like, how do I inject this movie directly into my veins for maximum, like, fast-track appreciation?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And, yeah, big fan of that Star Wars thing, so.
Okay. How are you feeling, Emily?
Eh, I'm seeing it. We'll see what happens.
Oh.
Whew.
I'm also seeing Cats the next day, which I kind of think I might enjoy more.
Oh. This episode of The Mandalorian was good, though.
Oh, so good.
Excellent. And Tom just wants to inject it. You're going in like Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Pretty much, yes. I have a plan for the day, including how much I'm going to drink and when.
Excellent.
Oh, so for me, I love that I always have to take a break like halfway through the movie, and that's like when I go see it my second time. It's like I get a little taste, like something new.
Oh, no, there's no leaving. That's crazy talk.
You leave during the first time you see a Star Wars movie?
Yeah. like nature calls, you know, like it's always at night and that's just, you know, I'm guaranteed to miss like about like 3 minutes.
Wow. All right, you guys. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and may that force be with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.